Josh and Frankie.
What a couple of dumb shits.
Hello, primates! You found Primus Drax. Congratulations! It is the only podcast in the universe that takes on every single Primus track, one at a time. It makes me question my purpose in life. But you know what? Today, I'm full of vim and vigor because I am joined by a young man, and he's still a pimp. And it's Frankie!
Hi, Josh.
How are you on this day, sir?
I'm doing great, Josh. Thank you. What about you?
I'm doing well. We are in the throes of summertime. I get to go outside, play in the sun for
with
much of the day. And then I come in and record this stuff in a room without air conditioning.
You're living the life.
Living the life. Sweating like crazy. Oh, I should mention, you can find us on the world of the internet at Primus Trax on Instagram and Twitter. The email address is primustraxpod@gmail.com. And, of course, the Primus Trax Facebook page maintained by Frankie. Anything cool going on over there recently, Frankie?
There are always some interesting debates and conversations whenever we post something. So you definitely don't want to miss out.
Yeah, and if you want to see my ugly mug, we got some really nice pictures from the Reading show that our good old friend Carla took from the photo pit. And thanks again, Carla, for taking those pictures. Today, we are talking about Hoenn for the Man. And you have to say it like that, Frankie. It's all truncated and squished into one word. It's not Hoeing for the Man. It's Hoenn for the Man, track 11 from Green Naugahyde. We're going to get to that track in just a moment, but we should break some news to you if you haven't heard already, especially if you are in Europe. It's true, and it's sad. Primus has canceled the European portion of their Tribute to Kings tour.
I feel really sorry for Nick, Steven, and all our wonderful listeners in Europe. I know that Primus doesn't go there frequently, so we're all probably dying to see them on this tour. So I'm sorry for everyone who's going to miss out.
Absolutely. I was lucky enough to see Tribute to Kings twice. If you're a Rush fan over there in Europe, I can understand that you were probably beyond excited. Even if you were just a Primus fan and weren't familiar with Rush, I think you would appreciate it because it's one hell of a show. And it's really unfortunate that they're not making it over there. We do have quite a few fans, Frankie, over there in Europe. And I do want to extend my condolences as well. It's like when a family member can't come visit. or a really old friend. And it's disappointing. So you have our support. We're here for you. We will try to fill the void as much as we can with Primus Talk. I should say, Frankie, too, speaking of our European friends, I set up the episodes to publish every Monday at midnight my time, which is 7 a.m. Greenwich Mean Time, and I guess 8 a.m. British Summer Time, which is a new concept I just learned of. So our friends across the pond, as they say, get to start their Monday mornings off right with that podcast dropping right into their feeds as they're heading off to work or whatever it is they may be doing on a Monday morning. So I'll continue doing that for you guys. We have some miscellaneous debris, Frankie. Regarding Green Ranger, we asked about what Les is actually saying in the distorted lyrics part, and we got all kinds of crazy theories. We have many interpretations that I can't take the time to weed through, but we received many suggestions via Instagram, Twitter, the bull board, or what passes for the bull board anyway, and other people just messaging us saying, I think he's saying this. We did receive a message from Tom Townley over there in the UK. Once again, sorry, Tom, you're not going to see Primus, but he suggested that Les is using a vaguely Scottish accent because he's using a couple of words that give it away. He says laddie, and there's some other people that's hear the word shite in there. Really? I was lucky enough to visit Scotland about 4 years ago now. I heard a few people say that. So, but the accent that Les puts on, I think it's the distortion on the vocals that make the accent more difficult to identify. I think there's a live cut that was sent to us in which the vocals were quite clear during that portion, and it definitely sounded like an American attempting a Scottish accent.
That's an intriguing theory, for sure.
Yeah. And now, of course, there were varying degrees of success when it comes to Scottish accents with Americans. Less has sounded passable for somebody who's not from there, I suppose. So there's that. Hoeing for the Man, Frankie. Track 11, Green Naugahyde. Music by Lalonde. Lyrics by Claypool, of course. This one clocks in at 2 minutes and 59 seconds on my CD rip, so we'll call it 3 minutes for even measure. I know we have a live history on this one.
All right, Josh. Premiered on September 23rd, 2011 at the Orpheum Theater in Boston as part of the first full Green Naugahyde full album run, which means the track was not teased during Guinea Pig tour. After the Green Naugahyde tour, the song remained in rotation during 2012 and 2013. I was lucky to catch a Hoeing for the Man in 2013. It became extremely rare afterwards, with only 2 performances in 2014.
Wow.
It was then brought back in 2017 in Santiago de Chile, which we know get treats very often.
Yeah.
Since then, it began appearing more throughout 2017 and 2018. Perhaps you remember that it was kind of a staple during the summer tour with Mastodon, perhaps because they were trying to appeal to that kind of audience, right? I was lucky to catch Hoeing for the Man again in Mexico in 2019. And since then, it was performed twice in 2022 during the latest tour. It is never a certainty live, as you can see. As such, it is always a nice treat to witness. Let's always begin introducing the track by mentioning that Larry used to play in Possessed, prompting him to play Something Evil, leading to the opening riff of the song. Improvs would, of course, have a lot of variation from night to night, so it was always interesting to see what Larry would come up to introduce the track. In 2011, the band launched an official competition for fans to direct a music video for the track.
Right.
The winners were Team Hi-Ho, who made a full narrative, completely professional piece, incorporating every lyric from the song in the story. If you go to YouTube and search for Hoeing for the Man, you can actually find a lot of the videos submitted by the other competitors. Since Team Hi-Ho won the competition, the video became the screen projection for the track during live performances. Here's a quote from Les Claypool about the song. "I remember back in the day, maybe I'm just becoming old, but rock and roll guys weren't the ones pitching sodas and tennis shoes. Now it surprises me just how quickly some of these people jump on the advertising bandwagon. To me, you're hauling your credibility out the window. Years ago, I was offered a commercial, and it was for a product I actually used and liked. And I talked to Matt Stone and a bunch of friends about it. Matt said, yeah, it's a cool idea, and you would probably do a good job at it. But whenever I see someone in one of these commercials, I know they have a price. That's the price they will do something for. We all admire Tom Waits for various things, but I've always admired him for speaking out against doing such things. But also, he's taken people to court for using his material. It just amazes me how some people will just roll over. I think Les has been pretty consistent with this perspective since he shared it almost a decade ago, because I also recall interviews where he said that you would never hear a Primus song in a piece of advertisement. He said, why would he look for even more money through that venue, right?
Right.
He said that his artistic integrity is more important than making money that way. And you recall that he also mentioned declining an offer for a reality show. He mentioned in an interview that he was offered to do a reality show in the same vein as the Osbournes. So they wanted to document his life at Rancho Relaxo with his family, and Les said, no way.
Oh my
God. I actually remember a very particular quote. He said, besides the artistic integrity, he also said, why would anyone want to see close-ups of my warts?
Literal and figurative. Yeah, I can't imagine him at all being interested in that. And because he says all the time, I'm actually a really boring dude. So if they wanted to follow him around while he was fishing in his pond or mowing his grass.
I just want to say, Josh, that I urge our listeners to check out the Team Hi-Ho channel because they always catch Primus when they tour near them and catch really amazing footage. So if you visit their YouTube channel, you can be treated to very high-quality recordings of Damn Blue Collar Tweakers, Hoeing for the Man, of course, the Les Claypool Day celebration with Bootsy Collins, right, followed by an amazing performance of Wynonna's Big Brown Beaver, Too Many Puppies, and Little Fishes from Claypool and Delirium.
Right, Hi-Ho is always in attendance when Les and or Primus is in the Southern Ohio, Kentucky region. Go check out Team Hi-Ho, I agree. High quality stuff. Their video for Hoeing for the Man, well done, and Primus didn't have to lift a finger other than judging it to be the best video. So kudos to them for saving Primus some work. Team Hi-Ho got a little payday, and seemingly lifetime passes whenever Les or Primus comes through. So good for them. If you do search for Hoeing for the Man music video, you will still find 8 or 9 of those entrances. One of them in particular sticks out to me because I recall footage of a guy cutting up all of his CD booklets, his Primus CD booklets.
Yeah.
And it was, and even in his notes for the upload, he says, "I hope I win. I need to buy some new records." So he mutilated his Primus collection for a shot at some kind of infamy. Didn't work out for him. So as far as videos go, then, this would be the third of 4 videos created to support this record, correct?
That's right.
We had Tragedy, which was created by Les and starring Mark Kaur as well, one of our favorites. Lee Van Cleef next, which was also an animated one, so maybe that was contracted out or presented to them. Then we had the video contest for Hoeing for the Man. Primes didn't have to do anything. And then we had Jilly's on Smack.
Several months later.
Yeah, almost 2 years after the album dropped.
Yeah.
Created by Stuart Copeland's son. So once again, Primes didn't have to lift a finger. They were busy doing other stuff. they just have people saying, "Hey, I made a video." Let's talk about the track. Music by Lalonde, lyrics by Claypool, of course. I'm going to throw something out there, Frankie, and I want your take on this.
Okay.
I think that this track has roots in the Public Enemy track She Watched Channel Zero.
It doesn't sound crazy because they actually used to cover that song in the very early days of Primus.
And I'm pointing right at you across the glass from me at Primus Tracks Towers because I was going to mention just that. 89, 90, 91, Primus covered it every once in a while. And sometimes good old Trowels would come up and do the vocals. They covered it a few times and it was Les, Larry, Tim. And I also bring this one up. You may recall the Spin article from April of this year, Frankie, the 5 albums I can't live without, but yes. Les twisted it to be 5 albums that would have been playing in my conversion van as me and Lur drove around San Francisco. This record, It Takes a Nation of Millions to Hold Us Back by Public Enemy, is one of those 5. I'll just run down that list in case you guys missed that Spin article. These would be 5 albums that would have been blaring in that conversion van as he and Lur, in Les's words, who were probably stoned, would have been driving around listening to in San Francisco back in the late 80s. Those would be The Wall by Pink Floyd, the aforementioned It Takes a Nation of Millions to Hold Us Back by Public Enemy, Tom Waits' Rain Dogs, Uplift Mofo Party Plan from the Chili Peppers, and finally, In Your Face by the legendary Fishbone. What a selection. All 5 of those killer albums. I bring up Public Enemy, Frankie, because this is a driving tune, Hoeing for the Man is, as well as She Watched Channel Zero. I'm thinking about that intensity of Public Enemy sampling Slayer's Angel of Death, and it just seems like it would have been a catalyst for what Larry was doing, because that too, Hoeing, is a nice driving tune, and it starts with a really strong, intense guitar lick. For those of you who haven't heard She Watched Channel Zero, I'll give you a taste, and it's a fantastic record. I don't know what you're waiting for. Real
The woman makes the men all pause. And if you got a woman, she might make you forget yours. There's a five-letter word to describe her character. But her brain's being washed by an actor.
When you listen to that kick, doo-doo, doo-doo-doo-doo, you know, so that there, Frankie, there's a, it's similar. I'm not going to say it's the same, but we get a really nice driving kick drum from Jay Lane as well in this track that really bumps. So I'm not saying that, you know, if you put these two songs right next to each other, you don't hear a lot of similarities, but it does seem like they might be distant relatives to a degree.
I agree.
Well, you know, Frankie, conflict is what drives entertainment. So when you agree with me, no, I'm kidding. I appreciate
There's
that.
Nothing left to discuss.
Exactly. Good night, everybody. No, I think that's so that's where I'm coming from, because even though they were stoned to the gills, Les and Larry probably listened to this record dozens of times. For them to cover this track, it clearly had an effect on them. It was one that they enjoyed. Let's talk about Hoenn then. I want to go to the guitar first. This is obviously a track that Larry pioneered and brought in with his licks there. And to me, this is one of Larry's biggest guitar sounds, despite the record's production. I'm already on record as saying that this album does not have the greatest production values, but it sounds huge. Let's hear it, shall we? Fuzz City, I love it. Overdriven, tubular. You pointed to, Frankie, Les prompting Larry to play something evil to preface Hoenn for the Man in some of these live performances. And I actually had to go back. I went to good old Toasterland and listened to a few of those from 2012 and 13. Because one of the shows that I attended in 2013, I swear he played some kind of Foghat or Foreigner or Bad Company, some classic rock riff before launching into Hoenn for the Man. So, you know, I'm talking about maybe he drew some inspiration from that Public Enemy track, but I'm also hearing some of these big classic rock riffs in there too. Yeah. So I also heard him preface with Stairway one time on one of these live performances, which isn't surprising because he teases Stairway a lot. I heard him doing some of those triangles and some of that tapping, like Buckethead even. He kind of sounded like Buckethead on a couple of those when he was doing some tapping. A little bit of Van Halen in there. So he's playing some things that sound like they would be big guitar tracks, and then he brings his riff into it, which we just heard. So we get this really big A part, and that pretty much encompasses the A part. But what I really love, after a couple of repetitions of the main riff, he just hits a big note and just lets it ring while Les is doing his bass lick underneath. Right there, and then right after the first line.
How about one of them foot-long savages?
Love that. Just hits a big old note there and lets it ring. So we're getting some really nice, intense, heavy guitar. And remember, most of the time, Larry's frequency bandwidth is fairly constricted because Les is essentially playing rhythm guitar and bass, so Larry's frequency is narrowed, but here he gets to expand it and it sounds huge.
That's what makes it so special when we have a track that kicks off with a huge Lur riff, right? It reminds me of Cutting Town from the Brown album.
Exactly. That one starts with a pretty big sounding guitar lick as well. In contrast to that tune, which is all A, as we said at the time, this one brings in a nice B part. And of course, with a Larry Lalonde pen track, if he's going to start with a huge riff, he's going to counter it with this little rinky-dink, clean tone pull-off thing that sounds like he's turning the crank on a children's toy, essentially. There it is. It's a great part. Listen to the guitar because he gives a really nice flourish here to lead right back into the chorus. That's a great little doo-doo-doo-doo.
And the drums, I mean, they are fantastic. No? So many fills here and there.
Yes, there's a lot of space. It is a really stop-start tune. Not so. That's where I'm going to draw a contrast between that Public Enemy tune and this one. But even though Hoeing for the Manna is really start-stop, when you hear the drums, when you listen specifically to the drums, you hear that driving kick. And I think Jay is using the big kick on the A part to match the big sound of Larry. And then he's going back to the regular kick for the B part when Larry tones it down. And Les is doing that little descending bass line as Larry's ascending.
Do you recall how that particular part was used in the teaser for the album? And when I watched the teaser and I heard that part, you know, as soon as I heard Les say, shove it up your ass, I fell in love with the song.
Oh, that was in the teaser. Very good.
Yeah.
And I will say that's my absolute favorite line in this track. And it's one of my favorite lyrics on the entire record. We'll get into the lyrics, but that part, really powerful for me. But back to the drums. So let's listen. Let's go back to the beginning and let's listen to the drums in particular. And you're going to hear the kick drum pattern. You're going to hear it in the A part. And it actually, I think for the most part, doesn't change in the B part. But listen to that huge kick drum once the instrumentation arrives here. Doom, got, doom, doom, got. That is driving. Now, it drops out because Jay pauses and then resumes, but that doom, 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 doom is just thudding. And then Jay's just giving us a hi-hat clinic. He's playing a really cool pattern that ends with him accenting with a couple of hits on that closed hi-hat. And he's hitting some cymbals, but they're kind of buried in the mix, actually. And then when we get to the operatic part, which I haven't even talked about yet, boy, when we talk vocals, Frankie, I'm going to put on a clinic. But when we get to the operatic part, a couple of different things happen. Larry gives us a variation on the riff. He goes a little higher register, further up on the fretboard. But then there's some really great tom work from Jay underneath it to fill in that space. And notice he's still keeping the doom, 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 doom on the kick while he's doing that excellent tom work. And there were 33 Les Claypool voices singing together. So really great stuff there, too. So we basically have an A, we have a B, we have an A2, which is what I'm going to call what we just listened to. And they all work really well together. Those contrasting A and B parts are really fun together. And this song drives, even though it's got that stop-start in spades, which is a Primus thing. Some people might argue they overdo it here. It doesn't bug me in the least. I'm a huge fan. What's working for you here?
Drums, definitely. It's interesting because, like we mentioned, of course, the riff is one of the main attractions. The drums are fantastic, particularly all the fills. And I agree that this combination of what Jay is doing and what Lur is doing during that part of the song, it just works so well together. Surprisingly, you know, for a band for which we have praised the bass endlessly, in this track, it really takes a backseat. Les really lets the guitar riff be the centerpiece of the song. And that doesn't mean what he's playing is not memorable, but I think it just serves the song, and that's it. He's not trying to shine. He's not trying to steal attention away from the other instruments. He's just doing what serves the track, which is also quite unusual for Les, right?
Right. This is the rare case where he is not the lead when it comes to instrumentation, and he is playing a really nice supporting role, laying down a pretty funky lick there, but it's supporting what Larry's doing. Now, once again, I'm not a huge fan of the sound of the bass, particularly on this track, but I do like that funky lick that he's playing. I would, you know, not a bass player, but I would assume it's pretty much within a shape, so he doesn't have to move around too much on the fretboard, but he's given us the stuff that we love. He's given us a lot of thump and pluck. It sounds pretty darn funky. I just really wish he was EQ'd better on that. the production is the only thing that's detracting right now, because listening to some of those live cuts, it sounds really big live. Should we talk about vocals?
Sure.
Okay, I've been warming up for this for a while. First thing, I'm going to say this, Frankie, we have a smorgasbord of voices here. Of course, on the verses, we have the bullet mic, and Les has given us that vocal fry, which is a thing not a lot of people enjoy, but the combination of the fry and the bullet mic gives us this. How about one of them footlong sandwiches, right? And there's more, of course. Oh, man, that's a juicy burger. The other thing he's doing there is he's getting down into that, in the lower part of his throat. Go ahead and try this at home. Get down to the lower part of your throat to say that. Oh, man, that's a juicy burger. Because that's where he is. And he's also doing that underneath the chorus. I used to be a pimp, now I'm home for the man. You hear one of those vocal tracks, it's way down here. Used to be a pimp, but now I'm home for the man. Home for the man.
The track has a little bit of everything. Voice that you're describing, I think, is a narrator that Les frequently refers to in the songs. Yeah. We also have the classic nasal tone during our favorite part. And then we have the newfound confidence that is also evident in other songs in Green Nogahyde, which is the operatic voice, the really high register.
Right. He gets way up there. So he's going from, it's like he's going from low to high, because we start with, oh man, that's a juicy burger. And then we get soda pops and pimple creams, I'll grab it, kick it down, and all that in that nasal voice. And then we get up to this part with the operatics, and I'll play it before I embarrass myself, Frankie. So there's a few different vocal tracks there. There's a, used to be a pimper, now he's hoeing for the man. So he's about there. But then we get that falsetto operatic voice, which sounds a little something like this. He used to be a pimp, but now he's hard for the man, hard for the man, hard for the man. So he's getting way up there for it. And we know he doesn't like to record at night to disturb his neighbors. But I assume they must have heard that at some point during the day when he was recording those vocals. And wondered what is happening over there. So that one... There's a lot of great voices going on in this track here. So if you like to play around with your vocals, this would be the one.
What about the lyrics?
Here's where the vocals and the lyrics come together for me, Frankie. Because with that pre-chorus, that soda pops and pimple creams part, when he's doing the nasal voice, he can be a lot looser with that one. Because when he's down here, used to be a pimp, but now I'm home for the man. He's got to be a little tighter. And when he's doing that operatic thing, he's got to be on. But with that spoken word part, just coat your cred with Vaseline and shove it up your ass. Do you hear how loose he gets to be on that line?
Yes, and it's, because he knows he's delivering a great line.
Absolutely. He's delivering the zinger. They can't all be, but this one is. So he gives us that zinger there. And he comes back around to it again with that second pre-chorus about Charlie Sheen. So... let's talk lyrics, because there is a lot happening here.
All right. First of all, something that I find interesting, Josh, is that it could be down to Les not wanting to be too overt with his references or wanting to leave some room for interpretation from the listener. But I find it very curious that in songs like this one and Eyes of the Squirrel, it's like, well, and more on TV. It's like you know exactly what he's talking about, but he's not using the names directly. How about one of them, footlong sandwiches? Of course, we know which ones he's referring to, right? But he's not using the name of the brand.
I think the only one he does is when he says, look at that Chevy go.
Yeah.
Other than that, footlong sandwiches, tasty cola. Where's the other stuff?
Faster than greased up lightning, I think... takes us back to Camelback Cinema.
Well, it's a cultural idiom. Greased lightning is a fairly common metaphor for something that is incredibly fast. I remember hearing that when I was a kid, but instead of greased lightning, he said greased up lightning. He's saying it the way he likes to say it, greased up.
you're a native speaker, Josh, so maybe you can tell me, isn't soda pop redundant? I mean, isn't a pop basically a soda?
Thank you for bringing this up, because there's a lot of regional rivalries around this. And it actually has to do with where you are in the United States. There are regional dialects for this. And I'm going to be exceedingly general in my description of this. But when you're and I have relatives out in New York State. And of course, I'm from the Midwest. So in those two parts of the world, Northeast and Midwest, I always heard pop growing up. You want a pop? Have a pop. Hey, you're drinking too much pop. When I moved out west here, I heard soda all the time. So I experienced that firsthand. In the Southeast, and I'm, you know, people say this all the time, and I thought they were making it up, but a lot of people just say Coke, and they're not talking about Coca-Cola. They're
talking about cola.
Yeah. So if you go to a restaurant and they say you want a Coke, then there's a bunch of different options still. You can say, yeah, I'll have a squirt, right? Or I'll have a root beer, or I'll have a whatever. I can't believe I said squirt. What? That's the first one I came up with.
Well, he does get very explicit near the end with the worst thing about old Charlie Sheen is when Haynes, they sold his ass. Yeah, that's very specific.
Right. So we get some generics, and then we get a specific example, which, as you alluded to, could fit right into More on TV, could fit right into Eyes of the Squirrel. He's treading a lot of lyrical ground that's similar on these three tracks, which represents quite a portion of the record. But instead of taking on what is being fed to us via television in Eyes of the Squirrel, how awful TV can be for the consumer in More on TV, we're getting a critique of people who leave the arts for advertising. So that quote that you gave really solidified in my head Les's attitude here. Now, we had talked to David Lefkowitz in the past, who told us Les had turned down a lot of opportunities in the early 90s for advertisements and that sort of thing. And I'm sure over the years he's turned down a lot more, because he pointed to, in the quote you gave, it's a credibility issue. I think this is a good spot. I wanted to insert this somewhere, so I'm going to insert. This is a Bill Hicks bit. Are you familiar with Hicks, Frankie?
Yes.
Excellent. For those of you who aren't, Bill Hicks, stand-up comic, 80s, early 90s.
Correct me if I'm wrong. Isn't he the one that appears inside the booklet of a Tool album?
That's correct, yes.
Okay.
And the Arizona Bay lyric is lifted straight from one of his bits. Yeah, Bill Hicks passed away from cancer in his early 30s, I believe in around 1994. I could have the timing wrong on that. I was a huge Hicks fan in college. I haven't listened to him in a long time, but a lot of it holds up really well. So I'm going to play, this is 1 minute. This is from his record Rant in E Minor, and it's all about what happens to artists who start shilling for products and corporations.
Do a commercial, you're off the artistic roll call. Every word you say is suspect. You're a corporate whore, and end of story. And yes, I have been offered commercials, so I'm not jealous. And I turned them all down because I'm not a salesman. And I don't need money that is built on blood. So.
Who offered to you?
Well, in England, I did this really, this classic England. I got offered this is the product. You ready? Orange drink. I'm going, what's the name of it? Orange drink. It's classic England, right? It's such a socialist fucking nightmare over there, right? That's the drink. It's orange drink. Said, yeah, you really got my act down good, guys. That'll be great. You know, when I'm done ranting about elite power that rules the planet under a totalitarian government that uses the media in order to keep people stupid, my throat gets parched. That's why I drink orange drink. Yeah, right. See, don't you see how it all fit in? Don't you see how every word I said would be hollow and filled with nothing?
Sound familiar?
Yeah.
Right? It's a similar sentiment to what we're hearing in this track.
Excellent discoveries, Josh.
That was from the recesses of my memory. I said, there's a Hicks bit about this. So Les is saying that in different words, when you do this to yourself as an artist, you're no longer a pimp, you're hoeing for the man. And so you've given up all your credibility, and you've essentially given yourself over to some kind of corporation or some kind of product to become associated with that.
And I think we can also highlight how Primus has several recurring themes throughout their catalog, because just on the previous episode, we were discussing how Green Ranger has strong ties to Over the Electric Grapevine, right? Mm-hmm. In this case, the way that you're describing this song, it sounds like what they have been talking about since Sailing the Seas of Cheese.
Exactly. This is the cheese, Frankie.
Exactly. This track is like a testament to how long they survived succumbing to those aspects of the industry, right?
Right. They have, from 1989 all the way to 2011 to this point, they've resisted and will continue to do so. So this is exactly what the cheese is all about. This is a byproduct of the cheese. This is a cheese byproduct. How about that, Frankie? This advertising part of things. Product integration is now the style, and it has been for a few years now. I actually just recently watched an episode of Community. Are you familiar with Community, Frankie?
I love Community.
Great show. You might recall.
I've watched it complete three times.
Oh, nice. So you probably recall the episodes with the man named Subway.
Yes.
Who then resurfaces.
And they say you can't be Subway, and then he pulls out his ID to prove that he is, in fact, Subway.
Exactly. And then he resurfaces in the sixth season, which not a lot of people saw as a covert pitchman for Honda. So, you know, Dan Harmon did some brilliant stuff there by lampooning this product integration thing and turning corporations into people, essentially, which was also an outcome, by the way, of the Citizens United case at the Supreme Court, which allowed corporations to make political donations because they were people, air quotes, who could practice free speech. I'm not making a judgment one way or another, but I'm paraphrasing the judgment of the court. So Harmon did a great job lampooning that, but also it's clear and obvious he received promotional consideration from Subway and Honda for those two episodes. So not only did he parody and satirize these ideas, he also got some corporate money for it. Pretty sneaky. Pretty brilliant. Les Claypool is not treading new ground here thematically, even for himself.
He's approaching a familiar topic from a different perspective.
Exactly.
Yes, it's the same stuff.
Yeah, it's a continuation of the cheese from another perspective. Exactly. So that's where we are with this. As far as the lyrics go, yeah, there's that word again, green. Color green's all over this record, Frankie, literally and lyrically. We have those lines, soda pops and pimple creams will gladly kick you down the green. Just coach grid with Vaseline and shove it up your ass. I think the delivery works better for me when I shake my head around a little, you know, move my head around a little bit like
sassy.
That. Yeah, get all sassy like I'm delivering that one-liner. Well, let's talk about that second pre-chorus with Charlie Sheen. This would have been around 2010-11. Charlie Sheen was in commercials for Hanes, and he was talking about his underpants. Okay? If I recall correctly, it's been a while, but they had a series of commercials where Charlie Sheen was trying to buddy up with Michael Jordan. And Jordan had been a Hanes pitchman for years. It's really interesting because Les is going after he's speaking from an artist point of view, a musical artist point of view. But he's lambasting this actor who went ahead and did this, but he doesn't have anything to say about the athlete who became a pitchman. I wonder if he's able to categorize here and compartmentalize. But Charlie Sheen was in these commercials with Michael Jordan for a while talking about his underpants. So, yeah, they literally sold his ass, I guess. Turns out he was also dropped from that ad campaign, Charlie Sheen was, over domestic violence accusations in 2010 or 11.
Was this around the time that he was fired from Two and a Half Men?
2010-11, somewhere in there. I don't know the Two and a Half Men timeline. I've never seen a minute of it.
Okay.
Gasps of disbelief from the audience. Yes, it's true. I did not watch a broadcast television sitcom. I did watch Community, though. How'd they get that the air? That's incredible. Anyhow, I think it's a long shot for him to be lumping Charlie Sheen in with artists, but you know, you got to pick a target, and Charlie was a pretty easy target back then, and he probably still is. I haven't heard a peep from that guy, probably for the better. But I did want to go back to those verses. Got some tasty cola around here, and so on. Wow, look at that Chevy go. So anyhow,
it's a Tom Waits impersonation almost, right?
Oh, I think without a doubt he's going in that direction. But the narrator as it were, sounds as if he's rehearsing that ad copy, right? So that's what I'm getting from that. The guy on the bullet mic is practicing his ad copy. And it's exactly what you think it is. It's testimonial propaganda, Frankie. I know those were the two words in your head, because when a celebrity is pitching for something, that's exactly the style of propaganda that it is, a famous person shilling for a product. I have another couple connections, Frankie. I don't know if you're familiar with these, but do you know that at some point Ween was approached to do some jingles for Pizza Hut? So
I heard about that.
Yeah, and it has to do with the stuffed crust pizza. I don't know where that puts us on the Pizza Hut timeline, mid-late 90s. But they were approached to create some music for it, and they created about a 28 to 30 second jingle, sent it off. As the story goes, it was rejected. They said, no, you have to give us something else. And they gave them something else. So I'll play the initial offering that Ween put together for Pizza Hut. And when I say Pizza Hut, I mean the marketing firm that Pizza Hut hired to get this ad campaign off the ground. This is what Ween came up with.
Where did cheese go?
I don't know.
Where did cheese go?
I don't know. I don't know.
Where did cheese go?
I don't know.
Where did cheese go?
I don't know. I don't know.
Where did cheese go?
I don't know.
I would not fault Ween for creating that song and having it be on TV and them getting some royalties. It sounds really good. That was rejected, which is proof positive, Frankie, that marketing firms know absolutely nothing about humans and what they're willing to go through to be sold. After receiving a rejection from the marketing firm, this was their second offering.
Where do the motherfucking cheese go at?
I don't know.
Where the motherfucking cheese go at?
I don't know. I don't know.
Where do the motherfucking cheese go?
I don't know.
Bitch, where the motherfucking cheese at?
I don't know.
Motherfucker.
I don't know.
Where the motherfucking cheese go at?
I don't know.
That was also rejected.
Unbelievable.
And I'm going to guess they never got another call again. But yes, unbelievable. Speaking of voices, I love it.
Bitch, where the motherfucker cheese at?
I love that voice. I'm sure dozens and dozens of bands that we admire have been approached for this kind of thing and either said no or did something like this and were rejected. I have to imagine Ween did this tongue-in-cheek, as they often do. There's a lot here, Frankie. We could go into corporate culture. We could go into consumer culture, advertising, and just how toxic it all is. I have to say, though, at this point in my life, I'm pretty inured to commercials. I don't pay attention to them. You know, I grew up on them. There's some younger people out there who haven't seen a commercial in their life. And I've heard tell, you know, of kids who grew up on streaming and then they watched something with their parents on broadcast TV, didn't know what a commercial was.
Wow.
Yeah, exactly.
Unbelievable.
Unbelievable indeed. But they're out there. If you are jaded by corporate marketing culture and that sort of thing, you're not alone. And if you're looking for some great reading on this, I do suggest an author for you to check out about the perils of advertisement and corporate culture, and that would be George Saunders. He has a book of short stories called In Persuasion Nation, which takes on the consumer side of things, the regular person side of things. And the short stories in there are completely insane, because they have to be. It's the only logical extension of this corporate marketing, advertising, digital world bullshit in which we live in and what they want us to live in. The titular story in Persuasion Nation is of particular interest, I think. Saunders is pretty famous now, actually, at least in literature. He gained some notoriety for a short story book called 10th of December. And then his novel, his first novel, Lincoln and the Bardo, was a bestseller and got him all kinds of press. But you can find In Persuasion Nation, I'm sure, at any bookseller. And that's a free plug for George Saunders. I got to see him read and speak at the University of Iowa about 20 years ago now. He's brilliant. He He's one of my favorite authors and remains so to this day. George Saunders. Any last thoughts on Hoeing for the Man, Frankie? And remember, you have to say it like that.
Well, before the last thoughts on Hoeing for the Man, I just have a question for you, Josh, regarding this whole topic. Because I was thinking, imagine you're watching YouTube for free, of course, and you get bombarded with publicity. You will refresh the page so you don't have to look at the commercial. And because they will keep bombarding you, you will keep refreshing until it's gone. So these companies are paying for publicity that you're not even watching. And if you catch a glimpse of what they're selling, you just resent them for interrupting your video. Yeah. And you never purchase what they're selling. So what is the whole point of bombarding you with this advertising when you're trying to watch a video?
Well, first of all, I'm never going to use Grammarly. They're the worst. But to your point, my understanding is advertisers will cast as wide a net as possible, and it's worth the cost if one out of X number of people even investigate the product, because that's they crunch these numbers. So if we get one out of 5,000 people to even click the link, it's worth it. Or whatever. I'm just throwing a number out there. So it's a numbers game. They want to reach as many people as possible. You know, you get one person to buy, that's a win. So that's kind of the point of those advertising bombardments and blanket campaigns that you see. And, you know, people have asked this question for decades now, and it's a pretty fertile piece for comedy, which is, why do Coke and Pepsi still advertise? Why does Budweiser still advertise?
Regarding Hoeing for the Man, Josh, well, I think it's the guitar track on Green Ogre Hive.
Oh, yeah.
And I just want to rephrase what I said earlier. It's interesting to hear Les take a back seat and let Larry be the one that carries the song. I don't know how it would have been like. I mean, we have live performances with Tim, but I don't know what it would have been like if Tim had approached the song as the original drummer. I'm just glad it was Jay, because those feels are very idiosyncratic and very characteristic, and they just lift the track up tremendously. It could seem like a simple song in Primus terms, of course, upon first impression, but when you listen to those mini breakdowns, it's actually more complex than it seems.
It could be a straight-ahead rocker, and we get that with the guitar lick, which isn't normally the case for Primus, but we get a really funky, syncopated drum line and bass line underneath. Really cool stuff. And it all comes together. This is one of my favorite tracks on the record, and I really think they should play it live more. Speaking of playing it live, Frankie's got three cuts for us. It looks like our first one is Cincinnati. Let's hear what it sounds like live.
Mastodon Tour.
Yes. That sounds really good. And you can tell that's Herb on the drums, the way he's approaching the hi-hat.
What do you think about the way Herb plays this track?
I think this track is where Herb and Jay Lane kind of cross paths, because the kick drum is used as an accent, and that's something that Tim Alexander does quite a bit. So there's some crossover there. But it sounds like Tim Alexander playing it, and it sounds pretty good. Our next one, Frankie, is Louisville, Kentucky. Remember, you got to say Louisville.
Louisville,
2017, Palace Theater. You don't have to say theater. I just liked it. We're going to hear what Frankie calls an evil intro. Oh, yeah. Heck yeah, man. That sounds great. Let Larry play like that all the time. You know, the other thing is, I laughed because the sound Les makes at the very beginning, that how he nailed it. It sounded just like the record. And I always enjoy, I didn't mention that earlier, but I always enjoy that at the very beginning. We're also going to listen to the operatic part. Sing along wherever you are. That's tough to replicate live.
Very much.
That's all I'll say about that. They're not playing this song anytime he feels a tickle in his throat. It's Hamburger Train all the way, right?
What do you think?
Frankie, I can see why you like that part, because Les has given himself a lot of space to improvise, and he's goofing around quite a bit. It's pretty darn good.
I mean, yeah, he's got to do something to fill space and to have some variation in his line, which is pretty straightforward, right?
You bet. Now, those two were with Tim on drums. This last one is Jay Lane on drums. Great American Music Hall, San Francisco, 2012. Do you hear all those audience members going along with it?
Yeah.
That sounds awesome. Primus fans, you're great. Primus Tracks fans, you're just a little bit higher. Good for you. Well, those are nice cuts, Frankie, and I'm glad we got to hear both Jay and Tim, Man in the Kit.
Thanks, Josh.
Tracks. Big fan of Hone for the Man, and I think it needs to continue to be played. I forgot that they played it a couple times here on Tribute to Kings. Hone for the Man, no more shilling. Because you've been tracked. Next time, Frankie, it's going to be the greatest day of your life.
One of my favorite tracks on the album, Josh. Can't wait for that one.
Thanks again, everybody. That's Hoeing for the Man. At Primus Tracks, Instagram, and Twitter. Spread the word, why don't you? Go get some stickers. DM us. Email us. PrimusTracksPod@gmail.com. Get some stickers. Support the podcast. Later days.
Willie Mays.